back. WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively in the 212-28 where life is great. This is all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. We're letting ourselves play here. I got my my mask. I've got my scratch-offs. We're going to be at Costas next week. But right now, we're at the Beaumont. We're going to be getting some chops here. Don Moeller celebrating 30 years of radio all week long, all month long, getting up on the holidays. And I need a little lamb chop or something here. You know,
hit the menu, man.
The menu. He's
right.
Not sure what he's ordering. He's
going to
get
right.
Something. Yep. I'm in for the crab. Don, this is one of
man,
your...
Man, I'm telling you, I'm interrupting you. Listen, the new old-fashioned, buddy. Mm. Listen to this. Buffalo Trace bourbon, Amaretto di Serona, simple syrup, and some Angostura bitters. I don't mind if I do.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
A new old fashioned.
I didn't know you drank like that.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, I just learned that he liked lacrosse recently. 38 years.
Yeah.
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 Don Moeller is here. Don, this is one of your favorites. We're going to talk about Catonsville and go local. I said to you, I want to do a show in Catonsville. You're like, it's time. And every time we come to Catonsville, we try to get there. Last time we were across the street.
That's right. That's
and
right.
We were just getting going over at State Fair. Tom Quirk, always good to see you, man.
Good to see you.
A pleasure here to talk money today. Right?
Well, I want to talk money. I mean, we'll get Tom to talk a little bit about the county and what's going on and his legacy as he's hanging up the public service shoes and heading back full time to the private sector.
That's right.
Trying to balance both has to be a bear.
Do you remember life before all this?
It's very difficult doing two full time jobs. It's very difficult.
And it is a full time job now, yeah. Right? But listen to this, Nestor. This is pretty remarkable stuff. I mean, we're sitting with someone who's listed by Forbes as the best in state wealth advisors. He's 167 out of almost 20,000 financial advisors. He's in this part would make me a nervous wreck. You got to talk about this, Tom. He's directly invested almost $400 million that he's directly responsible for in 29 states. You've been in business 28 years. I mean, Tom, investing almost $400 million, there wouldn't be enough Maalox or Rowades in the world for me to be in charge of $400 million people. Talk about that.
It's humbling. It's humbling, Don. And I'd say since the pandemic hit, we've been really climbing the wall of worry. Literally since the pandemic back in March of 2020, April 2020, and things basically just collapsed, understandably. It's been pretty tough, and it's almost PTSD at this moment because everybody remembers going through this pandemic. Nobody saw it coming. And so now every time the market falls back, a lot of people are like, oh, wait a minute, is this the next one? So Omicron, when that hit during Thanksgiving, clients started to get a little nervous, understandably. But on top of COVID,
it's faster to get nervous now.
Oh, yeah.
Tom, I'm going to jump in on that. And again, apologize for interrupting, but because you just touched on something. I asked a good friend last night, and I want you to confirm or refute what he said. I said, here's what I don't get. I said, I don't get how markets can react globally to an article or two on the Omicron variant that may or may not be true, mm-hmm. and plummet, and then react in the other direction the next day or two when one doctor might say, you know, I don't think it's going to be so bad. Yep. And I'm saying, this is billions of dollars. Yep. Tom, how can them? And what he said was, there actually, is this true? There are algorithms that actually look for articles that will trigger.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, walk us through that. That was new to me.
Now, there's definitely,
well, it's all confidence, right?
Oh, yeah, confidence. But there are high-frequency trading that happens, a lot of computer-driven models and augs that really, really exacerbate the moves. And it makes it more challenging because 20 years ago, the markets would rotate in 2 or 3 months. Now they rotate sometimes in 2 or 3 minutes, not hours, but minutes. And so the rapid change, that's why you can't time the markets. People that are like, I'm going to get out of the market now and I'll wait till things improve. Well, if you wait till things improve, are stock prices the same as what they were when they were down? No. Stock prices reflect reality as it happens. And so often, timing the market is a fool's game. Most people do it very poorly, it's better to have a plan, better to be long-term, better
to
stay on
plan. When you say long-term in a plan, what
here you go. You're going to say, I'm going to have Tom counsel you right now. You're coming to him. You've got all this wealth, and you're looking to invest as you go to the next 20 years of your life. Yeah. Wait, talk now.
If I had all this wealth, I wouldn't need Tom.
Actually, the more people have wealth, right. The more they come to people like us.
Right.
Who are they going to before? And maybe they,
you know what? It is tough. I mean, having a plan means really, first of all, before you invest, you really want to sit down and run real financial planning. Look at assets, liabilities, cash flow, insurance. You want to ask yourself, well, what rate of return do I need to make my plan work over time? Once you've determined what targeted rate of return you need to make, then you develop an asset allocation that's going to give you the highest probability of hitting that target rate return over time. And then once you have your allocation in place, then you want to monitor, you want to make changes where you need to make changes. But I think having really good investments that you know that if there's a big storm, that you're going to get through this. That's the important thing. Think about it when you're on an airplane. If you hit turbulence, do you jump out of the plane? No. What do? You put your seatbelt on, you ride through that turbulence, knowing that eventually you're going to get to where you want to go. Same thing can be said with investing, that if you're invested and you're like reinvesting dividends, markets go down. You buy more and more shares as prices go lower, right? And so when markets finally recover, are you back up to even? No. You're now farther ahead because you've been reinvesting and buying low instead of doing what most investors do. Most investors, when prices go down, they look at their statement, they're down 50, 100,000.
Time to get out.
Yeah. And they sell because of emotion. Investors should be doing the opposite of what they usually feel like they should be doing. When they feel like they should be panicking and selling, if they feel that way, well, guess what? Most investors feel the same. And so prices are low. When investors feel really confident, well, that's when you want to start being careful. So when I hear investors nervous and kind of uncertain, that actually makes me more confident because I know that prices are generally lower. But if every client's happy and every client's optimistic, that's what I personally, as a professional investor, get nervous.
You really, and the folks in your field, Tom, really are mini psychologists, are you not?
We just try to keep people on plan. And it sounds easy to do, but it's anything but easy because people's money, that's their security.
Sure.
That's really their foundation of really what makes them feel okay. And when they all of a sudden get their statement, maybe $1 million is now $850,000, that's kind of emotional. And so what I do often is I just keep people's emotional brains and I take their emotion out of it and shift them into their rational brain. So how do I do that? I just talk about economics. I talk about earnings. I talk about fundamentals. I talk about data. And that often shifts clients enough where they can wait out the storm. But all that is predicated that they have good asset allocation, they have good investments. Now, if they're in fly-by-night stocks, they should bail. They should get out because fly-by-night stocks can go to zero. But if they own really good quality companies over time, you know, like, for example, Amazon. It doesn't matter who's in the White House. It doesn't matter if there's a pandemic. Are Apple or Amazon going to continue to do business? Sure.
Yeah, Disney, right?
They're all going to.
Right.
Warren Buffett said it best. Warren Buffett said, if you think about buying stocks, like thinking about owning a McDonald's franchise, say you own a McDonald's franchise, you're selling hamburgers and Cokes and other things. If something happens in China, are you going to just close your doors and stop doing business? No. You're going to do, maybe you'll sell a little less hamburgers, but you'll still be okay. So if you think about owning stocks as owning companies instead of prices that go up and down, you'll be a much better investor. So often what I do is really try to encourage investors to really keep a long-term focus and make sure they have good quality and then make adjustments where needed. I mean, if somebody gets too concentrated in an investment or if somebody has a position that's just not working out, you know, we'll buy and we'll sell where we need, but we're definitely not trying to time the market.
Well, talking about taking a long-term view, talking about adjusting where needed, we're coming to the end of 2021. You read more than anyone I know, you send me an article a day, something on the markets or the economy or the global economy. What are you telling folks as you look to 2022 in terms of what we should expect?
I'm cautiously optimistic. I mean, it's really, really easy to be pessimistic. Matter of fact, often when you're pessimistic, you sound smarter than optimistic. Just how the markets work. It really does. But I'm cautiously optimistic only because the economy is doing exceptionally well right now. It's doing exceptionally well. Earnings are coming in much stronger than anticipated. For example, you go back a year ago, and if you look at S&P 500 earnings, the estimate was around 160 range for all 500 companies as far as the average earnings out there, about $160. Instead, it's coming in at $200, a lot higher than what people expected. Now, looking forward, earnings estimates are around 200, maybe 235, 222-235 in the next 12 months. And so a lot of investing is about math. So if you know what the earnings will be in 12 months, you can calculate what the market should be in 12 months just by putting a price earnings ratio versus the earnings projected. And that's how people project earnings.
The stuff you learned in college.
McDaniel College.
At McDaniel College. Those algorithms still work.
Best class I ever took for this business was called Money and Banking by Ethan Seidel.
Uh-huh.
And
Ethan's
that was
a good friend.
Absolutely the best class I took for this business I'm in today. But yeah, our target price over the next 12, 18 months is a little over 5,050 on the S&P. S&P today is about 4,687 plus or minus wherever it closed at. So that represents about 9%. If you add in 1.5%, 2% of dividends, you know, probably a double-digit year next year. And it doesn't feel like that. I will tell you, no investor believes it. Everybody's nervous. Politics is unfortunately
inflation
tough.
Is real.
Inflation is real.
What we're paying for everything is real.
Yep, yep.
And I always think about the market as rich people own stock. And you'll say no, regular people own. Every number I see says there's a very small percentage of people who own the country, which right. is if you own part of McDonald's, you own, you know, you're invested in that. Mm-hmm. I often wonder for the people who aren't in your world of I went from $1,850,000, which is just I got $2,000 in the bank and I hope my furnace doesn't go down this winter, right? Like there's so many more people in that situation in this country that might never own a stock, right? Like literally that how one affects the other, how 7 out of 10 people driving up and down Frederick Road are feeling inflation to some degree.
Absolutely.
And then there's the 1.5 cars that go down that have so much money. They're angry. They're miserable. They got $10 million and they're still not happy. But they're not going. They're not going to live under a bridge, right?
That's right.
But the inflation's for all of us.
Yes.
For everybody that goes to Wise today and buys a gallon of milk or buys a piece of meat or whatever it is, almost everything costs a little more.
No doubt.
And certainly, if that's being reflected in McDonald's making even more money and I'm an investor, that creates a gap that's even wider in all of this. In the same way you talk about education all the time, Don, when you shut down the schools for 5 months and tell kids to learn at home, the ones at the bottom fall further.
Mm-hmm.
The ones at the top, they got apples, they got Wi-Fi, they go to school, they figure it out.
Right.
But everybody else is kind of fighting it, right?
Yeah.
And so you are talking about people that are in the market and at that level, but the inflation affects the confidence of the rest of us, right?
There's no doubt about it. And everybody sees it real life, up close and personal, whether it's going to the grocery store, whether it's putting gas in their cars. Inflation has been really, really hot this year. We all know that. And there's a lot of reasons for that. The supply chain disruption, for example. Now, we think a lot of the supply chain disruption is going to be fixed over the next 3 to 6 months from what we're reading. That will help a lot. But
there's a lot of money riding on it.
Oh, well,
there's people figuring out logistics.
Absolutely. And, you know, the profit motive is a great way to fix things. You get a lot of smart people that are going to try to figure this out.
So capitalism still works.
Capitalism works and works well. That's one of the reasons the markets have done so well, because earnings have come in. And this affects everyday people, whether they're invested or not. Because the fact of the matter is, if corporations do well, they hire more people. And with inflation coming back around, now we're starting to see wages finally starting to go up for average working people out there, which is important. But our view is inflation, although it's not transitory, we do think inflation will cool off in the next couple years. So our base case for inflation, where it's running, 5, 6, 7%, depending on what day you look at it, we think over the next 12 months, we'll start seeing that about 3.7% over 12, 18 months from now. And then we think of the next couple of years, we think we'll get back down about 2.5%.
Well, having said that, Tom, then what should the Fed be doing? in the next year, and what will they do?
The Fed
The
Fed should taper. So the Fed.
Tell folks what that means. Yeah. That's inside baseball.
Fed basically is buying $150 billion in either mortgages or treasuries right now every single month. So that's artificially keeping interest rates low. And so tapering just simply means the Fed will stop buying all these treasuries and mortgages and maybe have, it, say, a neutral policy as far as are they buying or selling in the markets. And but the economy's really strong, so the economy can handle the Fed stopping tapering. So this taper tantrum stuff, that's more fear than fact, in my opinion. And so at the end of the day, I think the Fed needs to get control of inflation, which means eventually start raising rates. Now, are raising rates a bad thing? Everybody's like, oh, they're going to raise rates. It's the end of the world. The fact of the matter is when you look at the Fed raising rates, and historically, for the first 12, 18, 24 months after the Fed starts raising rates, guess what the stock market does? It does pretty well over time, because if they're raising rates, it means the economy's back on its footing, means the economy's doing better. So raising rates is not a bad thing. Short term, you're going to get these high frequency people and these day traders and stuff, and they'll have a knee-jerk reaction. But for longer-term investors, the only way long-term investors can win is by being long-term. That's how they beat these short-term day traders. And it works over time. But in the short term, you have to have a lot of tolerance. Because when you look at markets and how much markets fluctuate, on average since 1950, the market's going down 5%. How many times do you think the market goes down 5% a year on average since 1950? The answer? Three times a year on average since 1950, 5%.
Every year, since
1950. So if I said, well, how often does the market go down 10% since 1950 each year? You know what the answer is? About once a year. So when all this volatility happens, every single time it feels like it's unique and different. And every single time it feels scary. But if you're kind of looking at statistics, you often just realize that that's just part of investing.
It's, you know, history.
To be expected.
History matters.
Yep, history matters. Statistics matter. And so that's what I do with clients every day, is I really talk to them about what the markets do, what is normal, what's abnormal, and decide what to buy and what to sell, depending on where the market's at.
Well, I love your term, cautiously optimistic. We say to folks out there who are, you know, and many of them, it's interesting, more and more I talk to young parents. They actually like this idea, Tom. I guess there's this thing where you can buy a part of a stock. You know, so
yeah,
they like to.
Yeah.
I guess I can get $100 worth of and give my granddaughter $100 worth of apples.
Fractional shares.
Fractional shares.
Yep.
There you go. Well, listen, shifting real quick before we'll get to your holiday memories before we let you out of here. But amazing, you're wrapping up. You're going to wrap up 12 years, three terms on the council. When you look back and you're sitting and you're enjoying that bourbon on your beautiful porch out there. In
red
O'Ella,
wine.
Red wine. Your red wine out there in O'Ella, looking at that beautiful sunset that you post from time to time. What will you really feel good about that you did in 12 years?
Well, I think, honestly, Don, and this is no secret, Don and I, we're basically tag team in Catonsville for the last 12 years. I think the schools, all the money we got for schools right up front when capital was easy. Mm-hmm. I think Southwest Baltimore County benefited a lot. And I give you a lot of credit for that, Don, because you definitely made sure the county exec and the superintendent heard that message. And thank goodness the late Kevin Cabinets bought right into it. And then the superintendent at the time, fortunately. So this area got a lot of the capital when capital was much easier.
See, you're saying that, and I just have been over in Dundalk and saw a high school open up a couple
and
years
you saw
ago.
Colgate
Elementary just opened a few weeks ago. So when you say you fought for Catonsville, I'm over on the east side, and I see plenty happening
right.
over there.
Yeah, yeah.
You
know?
No, it's been good.
It's been vibrant.
We've been
huge.
Very fortunate. We've had great council members focus on that, as Tom said, going back to, all the way back to Dutch, who was really trying to address roofs and repairs, and up through Jim Smith and Kevin Kamenitz, and I was proud to play a small part in that. I think it's been you've created quite a legacy. So you got kids. They're getting a little older now, but there are quirk holiday memories. What gives you a warm, fuzzy feeling when you think of the holidays?
Yeah, I was talking to Don in preparation for this. WBAL.
I don't green room, my guy.
My daughter. It was my second year in council, and WBAL happened to be there, and Santa Claus was there. And Sophie was talking to Santa, and they got on the radio. This is cute. You know, little things kids say. She was 6 years old at the time. She's talking about reading a book, Duck for President.
There you go.
And she's talking how Norwegians stay up and they meet Santa Claus. on Christmas Eve. And the Santa that was Santa Claus didn't realize that she really was doing that. So he was saying to Sophie, no, you don't see Santa. And Sophie's like, no, we
yes,
do.
Yes, we do. I'm Norwegian.
So there was a little debate ensued, but eventually Santa figured it out. But it was fun. It was all caught on WBAL. And 6 years old, now she's 16, sophomore at Catesville High School.
Still believes.
Still?
Always believes.
Always believes.
Hey, man, I'm 70 years old, and I believe.
There you go.
So you got to believe. Tom, we're in the Beaumont, one of the great new additions. I mean, go back 12 years ago when you were like, none of this was here.
Yeah.
Talk about Catonsville and what's happened down this main street.
Revitalization. I mean, this is definitely something that everybody in the county points to. What are you guys doing in Catonsville, and how can we recreate it? I'll tell you, the success of Catonsville, in my opinion, is there are a lot of people that live in this town that invest their own money in this town, and that's what makes this town special, because most of these businesses,
people shop here and they live here. People live here, invest here, right here in Catonsville.
I mean, these business owners.
But I think Ned Atwater has 10,000 people to live within 2 miles of here that come and buy his muffin.
Correct.
That's right.
Literally, they'll pick his muffin over the Walmart muffin or whatever that would be. Right.
Yeah. This town definitely supports shopping local. And we got just wonderful people and wonderful investors in the town and wonderful consumers. And you can't recreate that. This is the real deal, and people see it. And fortunately, we got a lot of young people moving in the town. I'm excited.
Almost got the Aparicios. He tried to get us.
Where do people, they listen today and they said, you know, that guy Quirk, he sounds like he knows what he's talking about with this money stuff. People out there who maybe have been thinking about a financial planner, where do they track you down? How do they find you?
They can just Google Retirement and Investment Group. And we have a staff of five people that work with me, one MBA, one CFA. We have account minimums only because we can only work with a certain amount of people just through time capacity. But, love the business. Love the business. Love what I do. County Council has been an honor and privilege to serve in the County Council. My main business that pays the bills is really my investment company. I've been very lucky. I stay humble. It's a very humbling job, but I've been
very
fortunate.
What are you going to do with all this extra time now? You know, you've been doing two gigs. You get all this time back. What do you do with it?
I could spend all that time on my investment company, but I'm looking forward to spending more time with my family, spend more time having a quality of life, because honestly, for the last, I don't know, 20 years, all I've done is work.
And Tom, we talked, Nestor talked about it, geez, one or two guests ago. Probably with Pastor Jacobson, who was in here from Catonsville United Methodist, that we really do, when I think of all of you who serve, there has developed, and probably fueled by social media, a coarseness in the discussion, a nastiness that makes serving not nearly as much fun as it once was.
Well, not even that. I mean, I'm reading about people having threats made upon them.
It's not fun.
In whatever way, not just you have a pretty significant job. I'm talking about people that are electoral counters, you know, people that were previously health commissioners, people that were previously... Not your name's been on lawns here forever.
But
people in government serving people. This has been a very, very strange time.
It's been. I mean, the partisan divide is really tough, and people are really angry. And I think, unfortunately, social media makes it so much worse.
Right.
And people pile on, but it's gotten kind of a little dangerous. If you go to my office, whether it's my council office, whether it's my home, or whether it's my investment office, you'll see security cameras everywhere. Because unfortunately, after a very divisive primary. My car, my Heather's car, Heather's mom's car, all got screws in their tires.
Right.
On primary night election. And then through CZMP, made a decision. And then all of a sudden, I got more screws in my tires. And I have a Tesla, so tires are $500 a tire. But I had it happen three different times. And so that's all because I'm serving elected office. There's some crazy people out there. And I think social media really jacks them up and amplifies them. And I think that's unfortunate. So it is a tougher time. I mean, you try to do right. And I'll tell you the thing that kind of gets me through the crazy extreme element out there is that I do believe that the vast majority of people are fair and reasonable. The problem is you don't hear from the vast majority, but you hear from the crazies and the extremes. But I know out there the vast majority of people are fair and reasonable.
Yep.
And we've seen it. I mean, my first election, general election, 55%. My second one, 62%. My third one, 68%. And so each election, I picked up in the general election. So we know there's a lot of people that value what we do. We see it in the election results. And quite frankly, you see it when you go shopping. You hear it when you go shopping.
Right.
And but, you know, it is a tougher time. And hopefully things moderate and people find common ground again. It's going to take a while, though. We got divisive
Well, we have lies that have been told. Let's just call it what it is. I'm a journalist. We just have lies that have been told.
Yeah, and they're spun out because of social media, and it makes it more tough, and it makes the job a little less pleasant because that's who you hear from. You hear from the extremes. You hear from the angry people, and they just want to yell at somebody. And so that is a little, and the thing about my investment job is I can choose my clients. And so I have 350 households, and they're all friends of mine. And if I get somebody that's, say, not the right fit or maybe just not the right person, I just don't take them. I refer them to somebody else.
You can have somebody else take them.
Yeah, so my business is wonderful because I'm dealing with all my friends.
Right.
And politics, you know, you can't do that. You have to deal with everyone. And some people don't want to be dealt with. And
so we're pushing peace on earth, goodwill to men.
Happy holidays.
Thanks for your service.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Tom, appreciate you. Good councilman's here. We're in the 21228. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. We're letting ourselves play here at the Beaumont. We're going to be getting some steaks, some chops, crab cake. Don Moeller is here. We have more guests coming. I have surprise guests coming. And we're going to be at Costas next week with more surprise guests. And people are telling me they're coming. Apparently, John Martin from the lottery, Bill Cole from Cole Roofing, amongst many other luminaries and dignitaries as I celebrate 30 years. We're going to continue on here at the Beaumont. I'm Nestor. He's Don. We are WNST, AM 1570. Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking. Baltimore, positive.
Take care.